hate crimes bill dies a quick death at the State House. The first progress report from an evaluation of DCS. That plus a smoking bill snuffed out and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 2nd, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
Indiana will remain one of five states without a hate crimes law after Senate Republicans chose not to take a vote on the bill this session.
The hate crimes bill would have allowed a judge to impose harsher penalties if the crime was committed in part because of a victim's characteristics. One of those characteristics was gender identity, which bill author, Republican Senator Sue Glick, says was a significant sticking point. A Senate committee didn't vote on the bill, which Senate GOP leader David Long says was a decision of his caucus. Still, he says he'll push for the bill to come back next year and notes some issues take years to reach the finish line. Proponents say it's cowardly for the Senate not to take a public vote on the bill. Opponents call the measure's failure a victory, but wish the issue were finished once and for all.
Is the hate crime bill's death a bad look for Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Senator Long says the hate crimes bill's failure shouldn't matter to a company like Amazon, but does it?
Well, it has to matter. Is it the deciding factor? We can't know that, but certainly it matters. And on the heels of RFRA, it gives the state a very bad image. It's basically saying, you know, if you want to go beat somebody up or kill somebody because you don't like their gender or their sexual preference or their religion or their race, okay. I mean, 45 states have dealt with this. And Amazon and other companies that were trying to woo to Indiana are going to be bringing people from all over the country, presumably from some of those 45 states that have been able to deal with it, and Indiana can't. I mean, the governor sat on his hands with this, and so did the leadership in the House and the Senate. It should have passed. It should have passed unanimously. And instead, the Republican Party is in the thrall of their right wing, and they won't let it through. And it's shameful. It really is.
Republican leaders point out, as they have pointed out before, that current law does allow a judge to consider anything during sentencing, which would include, obviously, whether it was a hate crime or not. But is that poor consolation in the wake of the bill's failure?
Well, I think it's important, and as Hoosiers who want to see Amazon come here, I think it is important that we reiterate that judges currently do have that discretion. And I don't think it's going to be the deciding factor. We all certainly hope it's not the deciding factor. But, you know, Indianapolis has a long and strong record of inclusion and embracing diversity, and city leaders, business leaders, the greater metro area. And so I think that's going to speak volumes. That's something that matters to Amazon. You know, the city has had a HRO on record for over a decade. And, you know, to counter Ann's point, Republicans are divided on how to deal with this issue. The legislative leaders, Speaker Brian Bosma, Senator David Long, both did speak out in support. A prominent Republican, Fishers Mayor Scott Fadness, who is also working on the Amazon deal, came and testified in support of the bill. And so it's an issue of we've got to figure out how we build a coalition that can agree on language that's specific enough so that we have this specified in the code in addition to what we already know that it can be used.
45 states have already done that, okay?
It's not with that specificity.
And if the Republicans really wanted it, they have super majorities. They could have gotten the Democratic votes behind them for that, and it could have passed. Instead, they won't even vote on it, which speaks volumes about what their attitude is.
As Jennifer points out, Indianapolis leaders certainly took great strides in the wake of the bill's failure to say that, yes, this was a failure at the state level perhaps, but Indianapolis has a long record of things like its human rights ordinance and things like that. So I guess does that apply to everything but the real estate plot that the State House sits on?
certainly you're right. That's the argument that's being made to sports organizations that might want to come here and hold their events, or to conventions that might want to come here and are sensitive to these types of issues as they go through the checklist, who has this ordinance, who has that ordinance. So that is the pitch. But when you look at it more broadly outside of Marion County, or at least outside the Indianapolis metropolitan
certainly.
Area, it's challenging. And in fact, ironically, this was a show topic we dealt with this week on Indiana Lawmakers, which is available on many of these same public television stations. But you saw it with two of the guests. We had both Greg Taylor, who's a Democrat senator, and we had John Ruckelhaus, who is a Republican. What's the common theme there? They're both Indianapolis.
That's right.
And they made the point that this is not so much, I think there's something to be said for this, that it's not as much an R versus D issue as it is an urban versus rural issue.
Well, that makes it an R versus D district.
Well, I guess it is a de facto issue. But you understand why Indianapolis certainly wants this, even though, as Jennifer pointed out, if you look at the 45 states that we always say have enacted this, only 17 have done, for instance, transgender protections, 20-something have done sexual orientation or sexual identity. So it's not...
But they've done something.
They have done something,
Suglick,
but I don't know if all the other
bill,
Amazon communities have
right.
done. That's my point.
And Suglick, the author of the bill, acknowledged that gender identity was one of the major sticking points in this debate. But Senator Long says, you know, he will personally push for the bill to come back next year. He thinks this is one of those issues that just takes a few years to finally break through. But
maybe
we've
a
now,
century.
We've now worked backwards. 2 years ago, the bill got out of the Senate. Last year, it got out of the Senate committee, died on the floor. This year, it didn't even get a vote in the committee.
Seems to be going backwards.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
Isn't it? So does that message ring a little hollow from David Long?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that he has to show some action to make it have some... Look, they could have passed it. Anne's absolutely right. They could have passed it this year, but it would have created havoc in his caucus, certainly, and probably in the caucus in the House. The Republicans internally are very divided on this issue, and it's a case of the moderate Republicans like John Ruckelhaus and more conservative, especially religious conservative Republicans, who are very much against it. They don't like the enumeration, especially of the gender issues. And so until you can get that resolved, or until you decide as a leader that you don't care about the people in your caucus who care passionately about this, and you're just going to go past them, because with the Democrat votes and enough Republican votes, they could have passed this. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't reached that point yet. Maybe next year he does. But certainly this year, they stopped it before we reached the midpoint.
And one question I would have, I'd love to get an answer. Everybody points to a case, 2003 Indiana Supreme Court case, Whitworth v. State, and something that then Chief Justice Randall Shepard wrote, which basically said, we enthusiastically endorse using racial animosity as an enhancement in sentencing. I don't know how people can extrapolate from that to any of the other enumerated categories. As far as I know, it has not been adjudicated. So I know Randy Shepard is a faithful watcher of this show, so maybe he can shed light on whether it was his intention when he wrote that majority. That was a 5-0 decision to include everything as opposed to just racial, because I think people are making a leap here that may be unjustified.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, a timely one, I suppose: does the failure to pass hate crimes legislation make it harder for Indiana to attract Amazon? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, this is the timely one: will hate crimes legislation pass in the 2018 session? I suppose the 64% who said yes voted before Tuesday's decision. 36% say no, and they were right on the money. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, an independent consultant's assessment of the Department of Child Services has taken small steps in its first month as evaluators delivered their first progress report this week. The evaluation of DCS began January 2nd, and consultant Sue Stibe says it's expected to end in June. Stibe says her group has already identified an agency issue, an ineffective data system. Neither new DCS director Terry Stigdon nor the governor's office will say if the agency will move to upgrade its data system this year. Another issue the consultant identified: high numbers of children in the DCS system in out-of-home care, like foster care, which puts a greater burden on the state. Controversy at DCS erupted with former director Mary Beth Bonaventura's December resignation letter, which raised significant issues with the agency and questioned Governor Eric Holcomb's management. New director Stigdon says she hasn't read the letter. Stibe won't say whether her group will interview Bonaventura.
Jennifer Hollowell, how should Hoosiers feel about this first progress report?
Well, I think Hoosiers should be very encouraged. Governor Holcomb is a compassionate, responsible, thoughtful leader, and it makes all the sense in the world to have an independent, unbiased assessment done. You know, DCS has been a challenge for every governor, and especially in this case, when you look at what we've seen already, that the number of children who are in foster care has doubled from 8,000 to 16,000 just in the last 5 years. So talk about the strain and volume that that's putting on the agency and the administration to figure out how best to balance all of that and do what we want to do, which is protect kids. And so I think it makes all the sense in the world, and it's the right way to do it. So I think that what we will see, and this also, by the way, very transparent. So you can go online the day they came out with the report. You can go online, you can read the contract, you can read the full report. They're going to come out in another month with another report. And, you know, they are going through and interviewing people from top to bottom, and including
and shadowing employees in five of the regions.
Yeah, and including legislative leaders, Democrats Republicans, and taking all this input. And so then we will have, you know, not some, you know, political circus about it, but a honest, thoughtful assessment of what the situation is and what we need to do. And so I applaud Governor Holcomb for leading on that.
The first month has yielded some results already, which they've identified from DCS workers, that the data system is a problem. It's a little, it seems like it's outdated, or it's just not functional.
From the 1980s, enough. You think?
But neither the governor's office nor new DCS director Terry Stickton were willing to say, yes, we're going to tackle this right away.
This
they
is
want
the
to wait for the report.
Press. You know, this is the four corners. Thank you. Four corners.
This is what happens when you
this
use
is what
sports
happens.
Metaphors.
Yeah, I know. You guys all do them. They've been in charge for 13 years, okay? Everybody, every county clerk in the 92 counties can tell you that the system is antiquated and it has to be replaced. Everybody looking at this can tell you that the caseworkers are overworked and underpaid, okay? Both of which require money, and that's where the rubber hits the road. They want to stall. For 13 years, these same problems have been out there, and they've not dealt with them. Now, should we have a study about whether we're putting too many children in foster care and why? Absolutely. And I'm all for that. But the rest of it means allocation of resources to update the computer system and put it in this century, okay? And then secondly, to pay decent salaries to DCS workers who are working in incredibly traumatic experiences and hire more of them to lower it. I mean, that was Mitch Daniels' goal how many years ago? And we're not there. How many times do we have to study something before we realize that it takes tax resources
We did get a lot closer to meeting the standards before the opioid crisis hit in a particularly bad way.
And how many years has that been now?
Yeah, it's been a few.
And we're still paying the $34,000.
You want to talk about the numbers in 13 years. Remember all the stories that came out in the O'Bannon, Kernan years? I certainly do. So that's my point. It's ridiculous to act like this is some sort of political thing.
You've been in charge for 13 years,
and they have added over a half a billion dollars has been added into the system in the last
13 years. You still haven't fixed it.
In the last 2 years,
Terry Stickton, the new DCS director, said she hadn't read the letter from former director Mary Beth Bonaventura that kind of kickstarted the latest conversation. Certainly, are you a little surprised by that? And should she?
Yes and yes. The former director had been there for a number of years, made a very explicit set of complaints in her letter. Whether you agree or disagree with them, it's probably good to be aware of them. I'm a little surprised that the new director hasn't looked at the letter and isn't aware of what those concerns were as expressed by Director Bonaventura when she resigned.
It strikes me that an investigation, especially one that purports to be a full court press, would be failed if it did not take into consideration the comments of somebody who headed the agency and whose comments and dire warnings sparked this investigation. Again, you can agree or disagree, but an honest investigation is you talk to everybody who has insights and opinions, and then you discern what's valid. Otherwise, because if they don't talk to her or don't heed it, then it will be the four corners stall that you were referring to.
They didn't say they wouldn't, they just didn't say whether they would. It's an independent investigation, which means they're going to decide who they're going to talk
but
to.
But they've got
to talk to her. The successor should have read the letter. There's no question about that.
Well, House Republicans effectively killed legislation this week that would have raised Indiana's minimum smoking age to 21 years old. The House Public Health Committee unanimously approved the bill Monday, sending it to the floor. But Speaker Brian Bosma announced Tuesday, since the bill has a fiscal impact, it also needed to go through the House Ways and Means Committee, and because Tuesday was a committee passage deadline, the bill can't advance this session. Increasing the minimum smoking age would cause a forecasted decrease in state revenues from tobacco sales, prompting the recommitment to the House's fiscal committee. John Schwanis, was this a disingenuous way to kill what was a potentially controversial measure without it getting to the floor?
Well, the Speaker certainly said it was not. He addressed that at one point and said, I know people are suggesting that this was just a way to get rid of this issue, but he said he was adhering to House rules, which of course would be that if it has a fiscal impact, and I guess LSA hasn't really put a number
on
it.
The issue, yes.
Some of the other numbers I've seen, it might have an impact of about $14 million, which again is small in the scheme of things. But I guess if it does have an fiscal impact, it should be routed through House Ways and Means. I mean, this clearly he'll have another opportunity, Brian Bosma and others, to prove their case, because if you look at how well organized the group is that is backing this measure, include Indiana State Chamber of Commerce and a number of others who see this as a recipe to addressing our skyrocketing health care costs and making a healthier Indiana, well, they'll have another opportunity. Those groups will see to it.
Yeah, that's for sure. Is Brian Bosma hiding behind the rule this time?
Well, he's the one who has say over the rules, so whether he's hiding or not, it's the way it is. From a political perspective, he's got the big hammer, and he chose to strike it down on this one. And, I'm not going to say he's hiding behind it, because he's the authority on that. And he did come right out and say, we're not moving this bill. And so, that's really not hiding behind it. That's just saying, I killed it.
Is this, apart from the way it was killed, is this something the state should do?
Yeah. I mean, we have a problem. We have a health problem. And we have a smoking problem in this state. And the idea that the marginal revenue that would come in from sales to 18 to 21-year-olds, for example, or the revenue that would come if we increase the tax on this, I mean, it first of all, balances out, it seems to me. And then secondly, how many kids are going to be addicted to nicotine between now and the time they get around to this bill again? And on top of that, what he's saying is it has a fiscal impact. So that's, I guess, more important than the health of the 18 to 21-year-olds, or arguably some of the people who had at least cut down their consumption of cigarettes in the event that the price went up. But on the other hand, we can cut corporate taxes till they're almost non-existent and then use whatever revenue they have left to train their next generation of workers. It's a great system.
There seems to be a philosophical problem with moving this bill forward, which is it's really easy to say 18-year-olds can go and fight and die for their country, but they aren't allowed to buy a pack of cigarettes.
Is or that going to drink, be the, by the way.
Or drink, that's true, though there are plenty of Republicans and Democrats who would say you should lower that drinking age back down to 18.
Have we done that?
No, we have not. Okay. But what should people who, yeah, what should people who are pushing this, but how do you overcome that sort of argument?
Well, for one, Speaker Bosma didn't engineer this to happen on the last day that it could occur, right? It came out of committee at the very end. And that is how the process works. So Speaker Bosma says it has a fiscal impact. It has a fiscal impact. And he is the authority and knows more than anyone I know about House rules and what must be followed. So to be honest, I don't really understand the cynicism on this deal. I mean, that's unfortunately for people who want to see this happen or don't want to see this happen, we all every year go through some situation where it's not in the cards. And the process is part of that.
Well, the Indiana Republican Party launched a statewide radio ad this week attacking Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly for his no vote on the federal tax reform bill. The tax measure reduces the corporate rate to around 21% while raising the standard deduction for individual taxpayers. It also eliminates many popular deductions and potentially explodes the deficit. The Indiana GOP's ad purports to feature two Hoosiers who will receive tax cuts as a result of the bill.
When you see your paycheck go up, ask yourself, Why didn't Democrat Joe Donnelly tell us the truth?
Donnelly has said the tax bill doesn't help ensure jobs aren't outsourced and would raise taxes on middle-class Hoosiers in the coming years while creating permanent cuts for the wealthiest Americans.
John Katzenberger, is this the sort of ad that will hurt Joe Donnelly in the fall?
Well, I think it's probably the Republicans' best hold at this point, but I also don't know that for sure it will hurt him in the fall. It could help him. Depends what happens between now and then with the tax bill. You know, rank and file are seeing a few more dollars in their paychecks now. The ad had two characters who both said, look, I got, you know, $2,800 more, I got $1,000 more. So what is he talking about? So, yes, that's a fairly effective tack for the Republican Party on this. But if we get to the other end, and we've seen this week, because of the more money in people's paychecks, the debt ceiling is going to be reached sooner than it otherwise would, and so now Congress has to deal with raising that in addition to the looming February 8th deadline. So if we have a lot of problems related to the tax bill between now and then that gives Donnelly a good argument back.
We've seen plenty of companies who have come out and said, well, we're expanding operations here or giving bonuses to our workers because of tax reform. Yet, we also have stories, as we have for years, about, well, we're closing this many stores or we're closing this or laying off this many people. Is every single one of those between now and November going to be a referendum on the tax cut?
If the question is, were they motivated by those decisions either way, motivated by tax cut? No. Will they be viewed through that prism?
Right.
Yes. And that's understandable and natural. It is an open point, as John suggests. I could see a spot, the reaction to this would be, you look at charities that are not seeing donations at the level they used to be in their servicing of, say, the impoverished because people are taking standard deductions and not itemizing and therefore maybe not giving. You might see a commercial with people saying, I don't have health insurance and I was in this accident, this car crash, but I didn't have to pay the mandatory, you know,
penalty yeah.
But that means I don't have insurance. So, there's another side of this, and as is the case so often, it really comes down to who can be most artful and effective in getting that message out.
Is this, as John suggested, maybe the Republicans' best attack against Joe Donnelly going into the fall?
I think we have several good attacks against Senator Donnelly going into the fall, and this is one of the big ones, yes. I also want to say these are real Hoosiers, Matt from Terre Haute and Kelly from Morgan County. They are real Hoosiers, and they put their information through the calculator and came out with the numbers of how much more they're going to have to spend and to take care of their family. So I do think it's very effective, and as Hoosiers see, whether it's bonuses or just that they're getting more in their paychecks, it's going to be a net positive for Republicans, and certainly it's going to hurt Senator Donnelly, and I'm glad that the state Republican Party is taking this on so early.
Voters are more sophisticated than the Republican Party gives them credit for. There are some that are going to see some benefit from it, no question about it. But the benefit they're going to see are the crumbs on the side of the table. The Donald Trumps of the world are going to save tens of millions of dollars in taxes. And their tax cuts, in many instances, are permanent, while these are fleeting. And people understand that, and in every polling I've ever seen, even when taxes were cut, nobody ever believes that they got the benefit of the deal. So I don't think it's going to hurt him at all. And if this is the best thing they have to offer, they can hang it up now.
If you're Joe Donnelly, what do you do to counteract this sort of ad?
One, I think you just point out that you were making your best vote at the time because you have a lot of unknowns. And then I think you kind of wait and see what happens. But if he were going to do it right now, today, I think he would make an issue about the uncertainty of the effect on the debt ceiling and what it does to blowing up the budget overall.
I think you'd do it that the rich got richer and the poor got crumbs, and that's the more effective political message.
I won't disagree.
All right. Well, finally, it's the big game this weekend, Super Bowl 52 up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, pitting the Philadelphia Eagles against everybody's favorite here in Indianapolis, the New England Patriots. Jennifer Hollowell, I'll start with you. Who have you got?
Not the Patriots.
I think that's the answer for a lot of folks around Indiana.
Yeah, I have the same thing. Anybody but.
Yeah, go Eagles. I hope they win.
I think this may be a unprecedented agreement, unanimous.
Okay,
to be fair, Brandon here.
We know everybody is rooting for the Eagles, but do you think the Eagles actually have a chance
to
win?
Oh, heck no.
Unless unanimous?
Stranger things have happened.
I think they have a chance. You look at the mathematics. No, they have a chance. And why can't we say Super Bowl?
I said Super Bowl 52. Is somebody going to come in? We'll see if I get in trouble for the last episode of Indiana Week in Review. Apparently, the producers are telling me the FCC has just called, so we're in real trouble now. As for my pick, in addition to really not liking the Patriots, my younger brother is a huge Eagles fan. So on behalf of Justin Smith up there in Minneapolis,
there
as a matter of fact, I'm rooting for the Eagles. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.